This is British Public Radio.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Thanks for connecting with the Radio Today programme. All our regular features are here, as always. David Lloyd's Radio Moments, the Radio News with Roy Martin. But there's no doubting the story of the week. After many months of searching, the Radio Academy has a new chief executive. And I think it's fair to say, to universal acclaim, it's our old friend Paul Robinson, and he's on the line now. Congratulations, Paul.
Hi, Trevor. Thank you. No, it's been really nice. I must say the messages on Twitter, Facebook and email have been absolutely extraordinary. People I've worked with for years, people I haven't heard of for years, all coming up with really nice comments. So no pressure then, Trevor.
Just remind or in fact tell some of our younger consumers who I think know you as a globe-trotting TV executive about your radio background. Where did it start for you?
Well, I mean, I was a listener, of course, first of all, originally to Radio 1 and Radio Luxembourg in those days when Radio 1 used to close down at 6 o'clock and you'd have Luxembourg at night on 208 and it would be fading away and coming in and out. But really, I guess the start for me was the start of commercial radio, coming up to 40 years now, 1973, October 1973, and the start in London, and sorry it's London, but that's where I lived, of LBC and a week later Capital Radio. And I remember listening to what was then, the new Today programme, the AM programme on LBC with Douglas Cameron and Bob Holness, and thinking, this is a whole new style of current affairs radio. This wasn't Radio 4. This was actually a whole different accessible Daily Mail type, although not Daily Mail politics type of radio. And then, of course, the amazing Brian Hayes doing phone-ins. And we hadn't heard, 3-hour-long phone-ins with people like Brian Hayes being quite as acerbic as he could be. And then, of course, Capital with Roger Scott and Graham Dean and Peter Young and Dave Cash, Nicky Horn. This was so exciting. I thought, this is what I want to do. And so although I was doing A-levels in pure maths, applied maths, physics, chemistry, I decided I wanted to be a disc jockey. And if I could get paid for playing records for a few years, that'd be a jolly good thing to do.
And I first met you, I think, when you were at Chilton.
Yeah, I started in hospital radio. I then got a job at Radio Tees with so many, other people who were there at the time, people like John Simons, Helen Bowden, Mark Mardell, Roger Lewis. John Myers came a bit later, of course, and then Mercia Sound, and then I went to Chilton as programme director, and Chilton was at that stage where it was acquiring lots of stations, so acquired Northampton and Harrowwood, who couldn't quite make it work, then launched Super Gold, then acquired Seven Sound, then acquired a station called FTP Radio in Bristol, which was one of the community stations, which was spending lots of money but had very few listeners. And we changed that into a dance station and called it Galaxy. And that was the start of the Galaxy Network. So that was my Chilton days, my first proper management job, working for Colin Mason, who was the managing director, who was actually a fantastic guy, a totally passionate radio guy. But I think a lot of people thought he was mad. He was a very strong TA guy. And I remember him saying to me, Paul, we're going to send you off on a management training course. And little did I know, the management training course was a week in the Oxfordshire countryside with the green jackets jumping out of bushes.
Then, of course, you yourself jumped into not so much a bush, but the BBC, at least. You did a stint at Radio 1 and then as head of strategy. What did you think was the difference between working for the corporation and working in commercial radio?
Well, I mean, getting to Radio 1 was, an amazing break. And I was so lucky to get that break. And, thanks to Johnny Beerling for asking me to come and join. I think what Radio 1 wanted was someone who had commercial experience to help at that point make Radio 1 more outward looking and to bring in some perhaps more contemporary thinking, particularly thinking about how the market was evolving, the competition was evolving, but also new ways of making radio programmes. And so in a way, for him to do that, it was quite a revolutionary thing and very far-sighted. But I had a great time at Radio 1. And then Radio Strategy, of course, was at the time when Radio 5 had launched and was turning into Radio 5 Live. And Radio 5, didn't quite work out because it was really a bit of a ragbag of all the genres that didn't quite hang together. Radio 5 Live then became a huge success. Obviously, one of the things I worked on was the repositioning of Radio 2. I think people now forget that Radio 2 was a station where, the average age was 60 plus. And we used to joke, but it was sort of semi-serious, that its audience was declining because they were dying off quicker than we were bringing new listeners in. Radio 2 really was a sleepy station. And so you know, I helped work with the controllers there, particularly Jim Moyer, to redefine that. And I think one of the things I persuaded him to do was to bring in new presenters, including Jonathan Ross and Steve Wright. And I think that was really the start of the change of Radio 2 into the, you know, hugely successful network it is now.
So in recent years, you've been working, if I may say so, on the dark side in television, and particularly with children's television. But what's attracted you to come back very much, you know, I mean, I know it's not a full-time job, but back into the radio industry at such a senior level, running the Radio Academy?
Well, I've loved the last 15 years working in television. I've learned so much, particularly working for the Walt Disney Company, who are probably the best at managing brands and understanding how content and brands work, and then doing startups and various entrepreneurial things with NBC and various other people. I still love radio. I mean, radio is still the medium that I think is the most immediate, the most powerful, the most intimate, and I remain a huge listener. And so the chance to get back into radio and to work across the sectors is something that really attracts me. I think, you know, I'm quite unusual, having worked at an operational level and at a senior level in both the BBC and commercial radio. And so I think I've got a pretty good overview of both sectors and feel I can represent both. And really, it's about a love of the medium, Trevor, a love of radio. And if I can make a contribution to help encourage particularly the next generation, I think you know, it's so important that new people coming in today have the enthusiasm and the passion, the love of the business that we had when we started. And I think there's a lot of people who are really, really amazing. You know, the 30 under 30, the Radio Academy 30 under 30 have shown that to me. So I think really helped to communicate what is special about radio globally, but also to bring in new people and get them excited about radio is what I would like to achieve.
Now, of course, full disclosure, I did the job myself for a few years ago now, and John Myers did it after me and before you. I found that one of the difficult things to square was that, on the one hand, some people saw the Radio Academy as a place to debate issues, a bit like the Edinburgh Television Festival. People thought that it was a place where the industry could get together to discuss, maybe even argue about issues, and then all meet up in the bar afterwards. But there was a tension between that idea and the idea that actually its job is to flag wave for the industry, and that the festival particularly, and also the Sony Awards, are there to draw attention, the attention of advertisers and sponsors and other kind of opinion formers to just how good the radio industry is. Do you see that tension? And if you do, how are you going to try and resolve that?
Look, it's a really good point, and I absolutely agree. And I mean, the thing about just taking a very simple slice, which is commercial radio and BBC, and obviously it's a lot more to radio than just that, but you know, at times the BBC and commercial radio can work together on some issues, and other issues they are clearly in competition. And so squaring that circle is really difficult. I think the Radio Academy clearly can be a place where debate should happen. Maybe you shouldn't air your dirty washing, but you certainly can have a lively grown-up debate. And I think people understand that, you know, different people have different points of view and have different agendas, and those agendas each have equal validity. So that's important. But at the same time, too, I do think there's a value in promoting radio, and particularly even more so now with online, which has got this sort of trendiness and sexiness, which really is not justified. If you look at the amount of consumption of radio, you know, a billion listener hours a week, you know, 90% of the population still listen. Radio is still a massive medium, but other people, and particularly advertisers, would have us believe that, you know, Spotify or Twitter or indeed Facebook are actually more significant and more influential, and of course they're not. So I do think it's really important that working not just on the issue of debate and events and training and obviously all the charitable things, but also we do actually talk up the benefits of radio, because radio is still a brilliant medium, you know, a medium that has actually managed to compete against TV, and people are saying that was not going to happen. It's competed against, you know, all of the new digital media, but it does have to continue to reinvent itself and continue to argue its case. And I think it's very important the Radio Academy is part of that debate.
And who do you think of as being the members of the Radio Academy, Paul? Do you think they are the people who are its paymasters? You know, is it, if you like, a boss's club, or is it genuinely more democratic than that? And is it about the rank and file, you know, the students, the young broadcast assistants, you know, all the people making their way in radio?
I think it's about everybody. I think it's the latter. Of course, you have to acknowledge where the funding comes from, and of course respect that, and those people have to be given absolutely, completely the opportunity to have their say, and indeed they should. But I think it's more than that. It is about all the people coming up. We have to actually think about the next generation. We have to think about the people who are maybe not working in our industry but doing voluntary work in our industry or want to get in the industry. So I think it's about the whole piece. I think it's anybody who's making any sort of audio for consumption should be part of the Radio Academy, and I'd like the Radio Academy to reach out to all those people, not forgetting, of course, our paymasters.
Paul, I wish you every success. There will be times, I assure you, when you'll need that luck, but I'm sure you'll have a good time. You've got a very good team at the Academy and some very good trustees, so I guess you must be looking forward to it.
I'm really looking forward to it, Trevor, and look, I'm following in illustrious footsteps. I mean, you mentioned John and yourself there, and of course John Bradford, who was the director when I first joined the Academy, I think in the 1980s. So I've been a member about 30 years. Of course, there's always wrinkles, there's always things to solve, but that's why you need a chief executive. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I'm looking forward to doing, hopefully, further building on what's been achieved and having a great time doing it.
Paul Robinson, thank you very much for joining us on the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dann. Here is Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Thanks, Trevor. The big news this week so far is that Tim Westwood is joining Choice FM London and spent most of his last show on Radio 1 and One Extra telling listeners all about it. What a way to go. He also thanked Global's Richard Park for his new job. If you missed it, here's how it sounded.
I am moving to Choice FM. Station I want to be part of, a natural home for me. Back with Richard Park. He's hired me again. Much love to Richard. Couldn't do this without you. The big boss in the radio game. Much love.
Paul Robinson has been appointed Chief Executive of the Radio Academy, as you've been hearing right here on the Radio Today programme so far. And sad news this week, as all-round radio good guy Henry Owens died at the age of 52. Hear a wonderful audio tribute to the great man on radiotoday.ie. That's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
100 years of radio.
We start this week looking back 33 years at a launch for a station housed in an old MFI store.
It is indeed Two Counties Radio, broadcasting from Bournemouth on 362 metres, 828 kilohertz on the medium wave, and in stereo on 97.2 VHF.
The launch of 2CR in Bournemouth this week in 1980. And this week in 1994, a new music and talk service for the central belt of Scotland.
What do you do? Does it mean going out the house and leaving the children?
That's correct, huh?
Well, you're not looking after them then, are you?
Don't
be
silly. Do I look after my children?
Hey, no, you don't. You're virtually neglecting them.
No, I'm not. I'm out there working to try and give them things I can't afford to give if I wasn't working.
You're out there working to get yourself fancy stockings and tights.
Oh, I don't think so, Scotty. No.
You're very selfish.
No.
Very, very selfish. Some early Scott FM and the inevitable Scotty McClue. Scott FM's launch format was 50% talk, with studios in both Edinburgh and Glasgow. It's now called Real. It's important to get your launch right, isn't it? But despite the best preparations, sometimes things conspire against us. This week in 75 in Bradford, the first news bulletin on the new Pennine Radio.
It seems now that the thing is to stop work and then argue from an apparent position of strength.
I'm sorry, we had the wrong cart there. That was Bob Scully, who's the British Steel Corporation's chief executive, explaining why the blast furnacemen are going to arbitration.
10-9-2-35, that's the sound going into your ear holes.
the early moments in the life of Pennine, now the Pulse, 38 years ago. And before we leave the launches this week, here's some news just in.
Home Secretary Douglas Hurd has officially opened Britain's newest independent radio station, Fox FM. Mr Hurd, the MP for Witney, and six-year-old Leah Byrne from Bicester together flicked a ceremonial switch, bringing the station on air just over 15 minutes ago. Company chairman Julian Blackwell thinks Fox FM has every chance of success.
Many people have told me that Capital Radio, when it started, made its listeners feel like Londoners and feel good to be Londoners. In the same way, Fox wants to capture the spirit of the county.
The launch of Fox FM from Oxford this week in 1989, and I'm so pleased the chairman thought it had at least a chance of success. This week, 5 years ago, Fox was one of the 29 local stations Global announced it was to change to become Heart. It was the biggest rebrand in commercial radio history. We've mentioned a few long-serving luminaries in recent editions, and this week sees another celebrating his 88th birthday.
On the programme tomorrow, Gerald Flood and Michael Croft are our guests, and we look forward to the pleasure of your company at 9:02. In 40 seconds from now, Jimmy Young takes the Radio 2 airwaves. In the meantime, this is Pete Murray signing off by wishing you all, wherever you may be, a very happy and peaceful day. Bye now.
Happy birthday, Pete Murray. 88 this week. He was on the launch lineup of Radio 1, but by that time he'd already been on the air for 17 years. He was later on LBC, of course, too. Another long-standing performer still on air is 85 this week.
Well, at the beginning of the show, I told you that we were going to have some surprise guests dropping in this week, and now we've got a young man who's got a new record. Gives us a good opportunity of playing it. But first of all, let's introduce him, Billy J. Kramer. Bill, nice of you to drop in this week.
Oh, thank you, Brian.
Just maybe radio keeps us going. Happy 85th birthday to Brian Matthew. He's been on air now for over 65 years. Brian's been on Radio 2, Radio 1, and before that on The Light Programme. A new series arrived on The Light Programme this week in 1946, although it had been on the Home Service before that.
Ladies and gentlemen, we invite you to Have a Go!
Have a Go was the first money quiz on radio. Contestants shared their secrets to win £1, 19 and 11, just under £2. The show debuted this week in 1946 on The Light Programme, made in Manchester, even back in those days.
And here is Wilfred Pickles.
Chris Evans's rehabilitation made a step forward this week. 8 years ago, he began his Saturday afternoon show proper on Radio 2. We've had a couple of test drives over the summer, he said, and we've decided to take it. Yes, we like this vehicle. It's 11 years this week since commercial radio lost Peter Tate.
Every Saturday afternoon, keep ahead of the rest by tuning to Saturday Sport on Trent with Lee Peck, the fastest sports show in the Midlands.
Peter Tate, remembered so fondly by his colleagues at Radio Air and at Trent, a real character. Peter died tragically early this week in 2002. Radio 1's longest-running breakfast show came to an end this week last year.
The time has sadly come for us to say goodbye. We want to leave you all with a tear in your eye. We've had a lot of fun. We moaned when we were tired. And every single month we came close to being fired. So thanks for tuning in. But now it's time for us to say goodbye.
Moyles, of course, waving farewell after giving 8 years of his life to the nation on Radio 1 Breakfast. This week, 16 years ago, the perfect BBC promotional video was first seen.
Just a perfect day.
On the digital radio front, GWR's Ralph Bernard said this week, "Switch off for analog radio must happen sooner rather than later, or the industry could get left behind." He was speaking 9 years ago. And is it really just this week last year that George Entwistle became DG at the BBC?
I'm very pleased that the chairman and the trustees think I'm the right person for the job. Mark Thompson will be a tough act to follow, but it's a privilege to be asked to lead the greatest broadcasting organisation in the world. And it's a privilege to be given the chance to continue to serve our audiences in this new job, as I have in my previous ones.
It's been a long year, hasn't it? So, with Mark Damaser succeeding Helen Bowden as controller of BBC Radio 4 this week 9 years ago, and David Mansfield stepping down from the merged GCAP this week 8 years ago, those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments!
Thanks very much, David Lloyd. Thank you also, Roy Martin, Paul Robinson, of course, and Audio Boo. This has been the Radio Today programme, a TDC production. I've been Trevor Dan, and next week we will have Tune In. Yes, I promise you.